It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keeley Voltina in for Kate Archer Kent. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers has sent a letter to the Federal Emergency Management Agency. He's asking President Donald Trump to issue a major disaster declaration for the entire state because of COVID-19. It's just one piece of the complicated, evolving, and sometimes disjointed response from public officials as they try to manage the fallout from a new illness the human body has never encountered before. We're talking about public policy, and we want your take. What actions do you want to see from government officials? What kind of a national response do we need right now? Join the conversation at 800-642-1234. The number again, 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Andy Slavik founded the United States of Care think tank, where he advises state and national leaders on healthcare policy. That includes the recent federal coronavirus relief bill. He also started the Stay Home, Save Lives public health campaign along with healthcare leaders across the country. And he was the acting administrator for the Centers of Medicare and Medicaid Services during the Obama administration. Andy, thanks for joining us here on the Ideas Network.
Glad to be here.
You have outlined 20 priorities that should be that should govern the national response to the coronavirus pandemic. A few of them: save every life possible, protect frontline care workers, create a national testing leadership team. What's the most important thing for the federal government to be doing right now?
Well, the reason that this is so important is because I think more than ever in a crisis, people are ready to follow a government that they trust, that put forward honest data, and that can help them lead. I think having competent people, scientists, drive decisions is what we'd like to see. And then taking bold action to make sure that we are protecting our frontline workforce, that we are making sure that we are protecting our most vulnerable populations, that can be done with much stronger federal action. I applaud Governor Evers and many other governors who are taking on some of those things on their own, but it's much, much easier when it's being pushed federally. He said a week ago that he'd like to be seen as a wartime president, and I think that's indeed something that I think we'd all like to see, but that means arming your frontline troops. It means reading the battle maps. It means being highly skeptical of good news. It means driving quick decisions and results in concert with the governors in this country. So hopefully that's where we're going to head.
Yeah, but how do you balance all of those priorities? I mean, they can't all be number one.
Well, in wartime, we didn't just fight battles in one front in World War II. We can have our scientists working on vaccines and therapies and new testing at the same time that we have our manufacturing capacity, increasing ventilator production, that we can have our military operations in FEMA move ventilators where they need to be. This is a massive federal government. I know we have an administration that has been distrustful of the lifelong public servants that serve across the government. But if you get them motivated and you get them activated and you combine them with the work that's done at the state and local level, we can get a lot more done.
You're in touch with the White House, with hospital CEOs, research institutions, medical labs, all at the forefront of this crisis. So how are you trying to bring people together just each day? What's it look like?
You know, I think everybody knows we're going through a time that is at least unprecedented in our history, and we're going to get through it. It's going to be rough. It's going to be painful, but the vast majority of us are going to get through it. The only question is, what will be the casualty count, and what will we have done? What will we look back on and say we were doing during this time? How much were we helping? How much were we fighting? So I'm no different than anybody else, except I have perhaps the privilege of having access, given my former roles, and the fact that I'm willing to take aggressive actions and help people take aggressive actions. Because in a time of crisis, speed is more important than perfection. And you know, I've led our way out of a pretty major national crisis before, although I think this one is worse. And so those things are the things that, you know, I know we need to do. And while I've never been counted as a Donald Trump fan, I'm very much on the side of anybody who is trying to get results now. I don't think now is a good time for politics, but I think now is a good time for pulling together.
Andy Slavik advises state and national leaders on healthcare policy, and we're talking about coordinating responses to the COVID-19 outbreak. And you're part of this conversation. There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. Where do you see leadership right now? What do you think needs to happen to save lives? How are you balancing some of these ideas like freedom and economics in the middle of a public health crisis? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. You can also email us your experiences or your questions at ideas@WPR.org. Andy, across the country, healthcare workers are pleading for basic medical supplies to stay safe, gloves, gowns, masks. We've seen in China and Italy, especially doctors and nurses are dying. And Wisconsin's getting its second shipment of supplies from the federal government now, but it's kind of piecemeal. What needs to happen and how does the private sector play into that?
Yeah. Look, I think the great thing about these times is leadership emerges in all kinds of places. You know, in Wisconsin, I read the announcement from Governor Evers the other day about the work being done by Exact Sciences and Wisconsin University, University of Wisconsin, Madison, and others to pull together to create test production. We are, I think, quickly seeing and fleshing out where our we're quickly seeing and fleshing out all the places where there are masks that are going out of the country and going other places that need to stay in the country. We're seeing volunteerism and people at a level that are at the level where they should be. They're doing things that are just unbelievable. They're doing babysitting for the people who are frontline healthcare workers. They're volunteering in all kinds of extraordinary ways. So the country's response is going to be at its best when everybody, from the biotech community to individuals and communities to all other kinds of places, are doing whatever the things that they can. And I think this ingenuity is going to get us out of this.
You know, earlier you mentioned that you advocate for policy at the federal level, for guidance at the federal level, to provide that consistency across states. But we're seeing still some states without shelter in place or stay at home orders. And we're also seeing varying degrees based on different local and state leaders. Do you think we need a mandatory federal lockdown to stem the spread of COVID-19?
Well, National Geographic came out with a very interesting study, so showed how each city across the country responded to the 1918 flu. And what's interesting about it, and I encourage people who are interested to get their hands on it, is it shows the social distancing measures taken in each city, and it shows what happened to the death rate in each city based upon the social distancing. And that flu, which is obviously different than this current case, but also had highly infectious, killed a lot of people. The differences in cities based upon how early they started social distancing and how long they kept it was about 2 to 1. You could have twice as many deaths, for example, per person in San Francisco than you did in Minneapolis, which was the lowest. And that had everything to do with what all of us did. It had less to do with the government and had more to do with how much we could sustain this this focus. So the thing is, there is a right answer. Now, that right answer is hard. That right answer is not what everybody wants to hear. We'd all love to go out and spend the spring with our friends and our family, and we'd all like to be back on the job, working, feeling less insecure about our incomes and so forth. But the 1918 flu passed, but it only passed when the disease stopped spreading. And in this case, we're going to need to take these actions until we have both therapies and a vaccine.
So I mean, we already have even politicians, not just business leaders, but politicians speaking out and saying specifically Wisconsin cannot stay under this stay-at-home order forever. But we are looking at a significant amount of time. I mean, how long would we have to work together government-wise to make sure that we could try to stem this? Do we have any idea?
So there's people who've made estimates. Bill Gates has said that it could be 6 to 10 weeks. And you know, Bill Gates is a very smart person. But the best answer is that it's really dependent upon a couple of factors. And I think this is what everyone has to figure out together. The first is we need to see declining day-to-day and week-to-week caseloads. So as long as community-based caseloads are going up, then ending the social distancing and the social isolation would be a really significantly bad idea for the number of people infected and the number of people who die. So that's, I think, that's important. Second thing is we need to have the ability to have rapid testing and contact tracing all across the community. If we can do that, then we have we have the ability to make sure that we don't have a massive outbreak again.
And let's hit pause on that, because we will get into more about rapid testing and what that could mean for how we're handling this new COVID-19 outbreak in just a moment. And we continue talking with Andy Slavik, the former head of Medicare and Medicaid during the Obama administration. We're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. We want to know if you think that lockdowns are necessary, or if for some reason you don't think that's the right way for us to handle it. What do you think about widespread testing or monitoring for and enforcing social distancing measures? Is it working in your community? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 to let us know what you think the federal government should be doing now. I'm Keely Boltina. This conversation continues here on The Morning Show. This is the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. The coronavirus pandemic has highlighted the need for medical and scientific leadership across the country. Doctors and nurses are working overtime. Virologists and epidemiologists are coordinating research and data and hunting for solutions. And across the country, mayors and governors are scrambling to make public health decisions. Leaders are coming out of the woodwork. Our guest is Andy Slavik. He formerly worked as a healthcare leader for the federal government running Medicare, and now he's advising politicians on how to manage this unprecedented health crisis. And we want to hear from you. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. What should the federal government be doing now? Do you think we need a national lockdown to save lives? Or is it better for states or communities to make those decisions? What do you think coordination would look like between the private sector to ramp up production for medical supplies and the government? Whose responsibility is it? We're at 800-642-1234. Andy, you were talking about just a moment ago about the idea of rapid testing. We know that Abbott Labs produces medical products. Company says it could soon be able to make 50,000 coronavirus tests a day, tests that can return results in a matter of minutes. Some places are still waiting days for results. Will this change our entire understanding of the scope and spread of the virus?
My understanding is that we're going to have tests that are better and better and better. As I mentioned, there's a company in Wisconsin that's converted lab space to start making a large amount of tests. That's Exact Sciences in Madison. The Abbott test sounds like a game changer. And I've not talked to Abbott. The people I know that have are pretty excited. I think getting the ability to test rapidly is very, very important. The other thing that is important is a different type of test, which people refer to as an antibody test, which is a test to see whether or not someone has built up immunity. In other words, whether they've had COVID-19 in the past. When those tests are available, that is a different type of test. It requires a pinprick of blood. Once those tests are rapidly available, we'll actually begin to understand how many people actually have had COVID-19 and have built up immunity. some people suspect that a lot of people have had it and don't know it, and that we'll be able to have those people out in society working and being able to do those things much more quickly. So those things are not far, far away, and they're critically important, along with what people call contact tracing, which is even if you do go out and we begin to open up the economy again, which I know people desperately need, that we're very, very careful about who we come in contact with. We keep the 6 feet distance measures in place for a while, and we remember who we talked to and connected with, because we have to contain anything that begins to break out again.
All right. We're talking with Andy Slavik, who recently launched the Stay Home, Save Lives public health campaign, along with other healthcare leaders across the country. And we're discussing public policy when it comes to the coronavirus outbreak. And we have Katie from Janesville ready to join the conversation. Hi, Katie.
Hi, good morning, and thanks for taking my call. You had asked earlier as to whether we needed a national lockdown. I do not believe that we need a national one. I do believe that the states can handle that on their own, as some of them have been setting up checkpoints along their borders. If we have different states that are supposed to be peaking here this week, and we have others that aren't supposed to peak until July, if we have a national lockdown, those states that are further down the curve, we're really going to be hurting on the economy, on the individual people. Some of those states have more land than they have people, so they already are social distancing anyway. But I do believe that the states themselves can handle a lot of that, with federal guidelines, of course. But let the states do it, not a national one.
All right, Katie, thanks for that perspective. And Andy, Katie's saying, sure, federal guidance is good, but we have to keep control at the local level when it comes to, you know, restricting people's movements.
Katie's very, very smart about this issue, and what she's saying makes a lot of sense. Southern Italy and Northern Italy, things hit it at different times. There's two challenges, however, with that, which makes it difficult. One is that people are, it turns out that days and weeks of starting, when you start, has an enormous difference on the and overall death rate, and states don't always know. So we have to have the ability, given that people still travel around this country, we have to have the ability, if a state is not acting when the CDC or others see the data that tell us when to take action, that the federal government should be able to overrule, because there are states right now and governors right now who are really not taking this as seriously as Governor Evers. And, to take Florida as a well-known example, there are people that go down to Florida, whether they're snowbirds from Wisconsin or whether they're high schoolers or teenagers, and Wisconsin, a lot of the spread that has come to places like Wisconsin and to Minnesota and other places has in fact come from that kind of travel. State putting restrictions at state borders doesn't always help, because a lot of these, particularly high school and college age people, more than half of them don't have symptoms, so you couldn't even take their temperature. So it's a tricky question, and I agree that local conditions matter, but I also think that the federal government can't be afraid to play a stronger role.
Our election is next Tuesday, is Tuesday here in Wisconsin, and elections are a fundamental part of our functioning democracy. And yet it's a pandemic. Do you think public policy-wise we should be holding elections during the COVID-19 outbreak, or is it a dangerous precedent to set? Where do you fall?
I think we have to keep our democracy strong. I don't think anybody would feel very good about removing some of the core underpinnings of who we are. I think we need to be able to find other ways of doing it in the year 2020. We can do it by mail. We can find other ways to do it. It's part of a larger theme of things that I keep saying, which is, much as possible, we need to be safe, but we need to go on with our lives too. We can't be spending 24 hours obsessing about a virus that is going to make us miserable. It's already presenting economic challenges. It's already presenting, obviously, health challenges to families. we can't add to that. And particularly at a time when people have are distant from their loved ones and their friends, we have to find the things that we can do and we have the ingenuity to do and keep them going. And our democracy is a vital part of that.
And what do you say then to skeptics who think that all of these restrictions, the economic fallout, the mass panic, it's just overblowing something? It's not really the real threat.
I think you're hearing that less and less, and I think you're going to hear that less and less. Not that it'll go away at all. And there's merit to the point that the economic consequences of this are extremely challenging for people. So I have a lot of empathy for people who say that we're in a tough situation and there's going to be real damage from any extended ability to focus on these health issues. But we do know is that when people let up too early, and we know this from other countries, the Asian countries right now, and we know it from the 1918 flu, that it bounces right back, and it bounces back in a way that can be as significant, can have as many people dying. So we're better off, even though it's painful, getting it all done at once and then being able to move on. The skeptics, I think, are going to find, if they're really skeptical, I think they're learning every day, as I think President Trump has, that it's going to be hard to avoid the images we see on TV, the numbers that we see on TV, the images of hospitals. There's the kinds of things we haven't seen in this country, certainly in our lifetime. We maybe barely even see them overseas, and we see it during wartime. But when people see those images, I think it's going to be hard for people to be skeptical. They may still have an argument for how the damage works on the other side as well. But sadly, this is going to be a rough month for everybody.
Andy, thank you so much for your time today. Andy Slavik was the acting administrator for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services from 2015 to 2017. His new podcast about the pandemic is called In the Bubble. I'm Keely Boltina. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network, and you can find the latest news and related stories to COVID-19 at our website. Just go to WPR.org/COVID. Good morning.